come up on a tight wire.
I'm Daniel Chacon.
And I'm Tim Hernandez.
Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire.
Our guest today is debut poet Natalie Center-Sapico. We'll be speaking with her.
Her book is called The Virgin Cities. Many of the poems, if not all of them, taking place right here on the border in the Twin Cities of El Paso and Ciudad Juarez. It is, quite frankly, one of the most amazing first books of poems that I've read in a long time. And you're going to really love these poems. And
right. And it's probably good to mention that the book was actually published by the Center for Literary Publishing at Colorado State University. A fantastic series there that they've been.
Yeah.
And Natalie's just sort of another strong voice coming out of that. So, yeah.
Right. They don't take just any dummy. One of the interesting things about these poems is that, as I said, they're all take place here on the border of Ciudad Juarez and El Paso. And I notice, well, we know that there's a lot of writers
right.
who write about this area, some of them who aren't even from here, although Natalie, I think she right. moved here when she was 7 years old and stayed here all the way until she went off to grad school,
right.
got her degree from our university. But what is it about this border? Why do people want to write about it so much? You're from Fresno, but now you're on
right.
the border, living
now
on, the,
on
border.
The border.
What kind of observations have you made
right.
about this place and the creative writer and the poet and the artist?
Well, you know, actually, Natalie brings that up too in her poems. You know, she has a poem where she talks about not just writers, but artists in general, you know, filmmakers, you know, installation artists everywhere are writing about the sort of, you know, the two cities, El Paso and Juarez. And obviously, I think, you know, that the contrast between the cities, right? Juarez being one of the listed as one of the most dangerous cities in the world, and then El Paso being one of the safest cities in the United States, that real kind of contrast, I think, just creates for obviously a lot of interest in terms of the arts. We want to illuminate those differences. We want to sort of focus on those differences and bring them to and have discussions about them.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, too, because of the reputation it's had in Juarez and all of the women who have been found murdered there. So there's a lot of interest. I think everyone's trying to kind of get to an answer or some kind of at least understanding of it. For me, you know, being in California early on as I wanted to become a writer, and I knew that, some of the first writers I read without knowing were from El Paso, you know, and it wasn't until later, years later, that I realized, wow, they're all from El Paso. So, you know, I think just the sort of on that level alone, they've had a big influence. But I don't think I've ever written anything specifically about this region yet, but it certainly informs my writing living here now. Yeah.
And I'm sure ultimately it'll end up coming in, you know, inserting itself in your poetry and your fiction.
Right. I mean, it does now, even with the project I'm working on. The fact that I can walk out of my office and see Juarez from
right.
here, you know. And the two cities really are, as Natalie's book, her title is Virgin, the two cities really are a sort of divergence of two countries. And so you can't help but live in that, you know, when you're here. I mean,
you know, my God, it just struck me how similar our backgrounds are. I'm from Fresno and I come to El Paso. You know, you're from Fresno, you come
right.
to El Paso. But
right.
It took me 10 years of living here before the landscape naturally came out in a story. I never tried to force it.
Right, yeah,
you know,
me either.
But
yeah.
it took me 10 years before I wrote about the border. My last book, Hotel Juarez, you know, takes
right.
place primarily on the border. But there's something about this place, and it could be a number of things. It could even be that writers, you know, romanticize these places of oppression and these places of tragedy.
Sure.
And so they want to be identified with those places as a way to write about tragedy and to write about oppression, to write about, you know, these,
right.
these issues that we,
right.
we all care about. And I think there's even some criticism that writers who don't deserve to write about El Paso Juarez are still writing about El Paso Juarez, which I think is, you know, not
right.
a very legitimate idea. I think you can write about anywhere in the world.
Sure.
What
yeah.
matters is language. What matters is truth.
Yeah, I would agree with that, actually. But I would add, you know, and this is actually something that I was teaching last fall and it was teaching my students was, you know, this idea that as writers, right, we can create from our own authorial, you know, warp if we want. But I really encourage students to get out from behind their desks and go visit the places.
Yes.
And, you know, we had a little discussion earlier how the poet Loriann Guerrero, you know, came here to El Paso, right, to work on her her sonnets, her crown of sonnets. But, you know, if we're going to write about a certain landscape or place, I really encourage writers to go at least visit it, spend some time there, and talk to the people who are living it every day.
Right, right. Yeah. And you know what, Tim? You've been here for a while now. You got your passport. Let's go hang out in Juarez. Let's go have a
I've been
Kentucky
waiting.
Club.
I've been waiting.
Let's do it. Okay, Tim and I are going to go to the Kentucky Club, so we'll see you next week. But first, let's talk to Natalie Center-Sapico about her new book of poems, The Virgin Cities. Mm-hmm. Natalie Center-Sampico is from El Paso, Texas, and Ciudad Juarez. Her poems have appeared in The Believer, Prairie Schooner, West Branch, Palabra, and American Poets, among others, as well as in Best American Poetry 2015. And she teaches creative writing at Juan Diego Catholic High School. This is her first book of poems, The Virgin Cities. Natalie, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Thanks for having me.
This is your debut collection, and how has the reception been? Or, I mean, I guess the question really is, has the reception been everything you thought it would in anticipation of your first book?
It's kind of strange. I don't know how to answer that. I guess on the one hand, it's been really, really exciting just to see it out in a book form for me.
Sure.
Because I've been working on the poems kind of in moving pieces for a long time, and then putting them together into something that kind of looked like a version of a book for my dissertation, and then revising it for another year. And, you know, just seeing it now, like, in a book form is really exciting. For the reception of the book, I've been really kind of thrilled. I mean, it just came out April 15th. It's interesting because with social media now, you know, writers that you really admire and love will, like, post about that they're reading your book, which mm-hmm. is sort of surreal.
Right.
Well, that's cool. And if it just came out, then there's still so much possibility of winning awards, and the book would certainly certainly deserve it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's start with your relationship with poetry. How did you come into poetry?
I was really lucky in that my parents both really loved poetry. And so I grew up in a house with, like, you know, a lot of poetry around, especially a lot of Spanish language poetry because of my mom, who's from northern Spain, and kind of having that read to me all the time. So I was really lucky in that way. But I never really even thought that what I was writing could, because I always kept journals. You know, even like as a teenager, like I always kept journals, which is, you know, it's such a teenage girl thing to do, but I did. And
a teenage boy thing too,
actually. I didn't know it was anything. And then my first, I think, like, formal introduction, I guess, to poetry was your class, Daniela. I took Introduction to Creative Writing with you.
I remember that. Wow. And you were already good at it then.
You should see the big smile on Daniel's face right now.
No, I was not good at it then.
Well, you know, I knew your father as well, you know, and I knew you ever since, I think you were 7 years old the first time I met you.
Mm-hmm.
And when you came into that classroom, you really had a sense of language. And that's kind of what I wanted to ask you about, that relationship you have with language. And I know for you, it's two languages. Did you come to poetry by hearing the language, by hearing rhythms, by hearing lyrics? I mean, is that what attracted you at first place?
Definitely, yeah. I think that I'm really interested in, you know, not only creating an experience on the page. I think that that's one way of experiencing poetry. But I'm also really interested in the ways that poetry can really move people, especially politically, by being kind of an aural with an A, right, experience. Mm-hmm. I like that idea a lot. And I think it also comes from when I was little, growing up with my mom playing, like, you know, canciones de protesta, you know, for the Franco era. Protest songs that were basically poems that had been, that were, you know, forbidden by Franco, that were put to song, and everybody knew the poems, and so they could sing the words to the songs. And I like that idea a lot with political poetry. I think that it's really an important part of the experience.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was saying that I know your dad. He's a white guy from Wisconsin who speaks perfect Spanish.
Yeah.
And he speaks perfect Spanish from Spain, from the northern part of Spain, which is where he met your mother. And your mother speaks perfect Spanish, and you all speak perfect English. And then you move to El Paso, where the Spanish is kind of, I'm sure, much, much different. Mm-hmm. And so all these verging of different ways of language must have had a profound effect on the way you write poetry or enter into a poem.
Yeah, and also, I mean, I don't know. I love language. I think it's just fascinating. And for me, it's interesting because, you know, for some people, like not knowing the way that somebody speaks a language or just right. not knowing a language can be really intimidating and they don't like that or something. I've noticed that they get really kind of apprehensive about it. But for me, I love it. I absolutely love it. I mean, it's just such a fun way, I think, to connect with people and to learn about people is through right. the way that they express themselves. And so, I mean, what better place than in El Paso Juarez, which is so, I mean, linguistically, it's like incredible, you know, it's like such an incredible place. And so, I mean, I definitely consider myself kind of a mix of all of those experiences and things. I mean, also, I went to a high school where, like, over half of my graduating class, they were all from Juarez and crossed every day.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's inevitably going to affect the way that you view language and interpret language and definitely affect my interest in language.
Right. And, you know, the sort of that intersection of two languages or the verging of two languages and of two distinct cities, Juarez and El Paso, that's all captured in your title, The Verging Cities. Would you tell us just a little bit more about the idea behind that title?
Yeah. So I had all these poems and I kept trying to really meditate on how I conceived of the border because I felt like in the poems, I was really viewing it in this different way, and I was having kind of a hard time articulating what that was. And then suddenly, in a lot of the poems, I started sort of writing that they were verging, right? That things were verging right. again. And I started thinking, like, well, what does that mean? And so I kind of followed it, and I really was interested in the ways that within that word, you know, to verge, right? You know, you can have like to converge, to diverge,
right.
All of these different ideas. And then when I, of course, looked up what the word verge meant in the Oxford English Dictionary, I was really fascinated because it has such an interesting history. And the very first one is that it's a phallus, right? Like that's mm-hmm. the very first definition
really?
Wow.
of the word verge, which
wow.
is interesting because in many ways, if you think of the border as existing on a verge, right, it is sort of this really, I think, like, you know, masculine dominant sphere, right, of like mm-hmm. who is, you know, better than who and, mm-hmm. and what right. that means. And I think that also started to really interest me when I was kind of ordering the collection.
I'm always interested in how books come together because I know that you start writing poems and then
right.
and then there's another poem and there's another poem and then perhaps at a certain point you realize, wow, these poems are connected on such and such level, perhaps a thematic level. And I'm wondering, at what point did you know that this first collection of poems was going to be about the border?
You know, it's really interesting. It took me a really long time, I think, to come to writing anything about the border. I don't know. I think for a long time it was like I felt like I had these experiences, but almost as though I didn't allow myself really to explore them. And I feel like that was really kind of self-imposed or something. I don't know why. I just like maybe wasn't ready or something to do that. And then suddenly I started writing like one and two, and then all of a sudden it was like I couldn't stop writing about it. It became a total obsession. Probably, I guess that started about my second year in my MFA program that I really started kind of, this is what I want to do and this is what I want to look at. Then I started kind of course, just guiding my reading around that too and what I
right.
wanted to do with that.
Perhaps one of the reasons why you were finally able to write about the border and not able to really write about it while you were here, because being so far away from it, you realized this is where you were from?
I think so. You know, I come from such a kind of hybrid background
mm-hmm,
and experience
right.
in many ways that to say that I was from one place, I think was really scary to me for a long time because it felt, you know, not to get really Freudian, but I think it felt really like I was almost picking one side of my house over another or something.
Oh, that's interesting.
And so I never really liked to do that. And then when I was away, I felt like, no, if I have to say that I'm from a place, and the place that really interests me the most, and the place that really has my love, it's El Paso, Juarez. Nice. I mean, that is where I'm from, and that's where I'm, you know, would love to go back. You know, the border is really what interests me, I think, above all else. And to be honest, it's probably the place where I feel most at home because it's already such a hybrid state. Mm. That it's like immediately kind of, it understands me, if that makes sense.
Sure, it's
not going to question that hybridity because it's already so hybrid, which I love.
And, you know, one of the things throughout the collection of your poems here that really impressed me, actually that surprised me really, were the images and the sort of use of flora and fauna that are in throughout your poems, you know, deer, ants. You mentioned exoskeletons in relation to the subject of the border. And I've always liked the idea that the quote-unquote natural world, anyway, doesn't abide by these human-made boundaries, right? Mm-hmm. That the critters and the creatures, they erase those lines. And in your poem, I light the house on fire and lie down, you continue to say, on my kitchen floor to feel the ants search the hidden sugars on my body. And even sort of the ants in this case crossing into sort of territories where they don't necessarily, quote-unquote, even belong, right? In your own composing of these poems, how did flora and fauna, you know, how does it play a role for you in these poems?
You know, when I was in college and I was an undergrad, that's when they were building the border wall. Well, through El Paso, that's when they were building it through El Paso. And that was sort of a really traumatic event for the whole border area. Wow. But we felt it a lot in El Paso, Juarez, and there were a lot of protests that I was involved in for that. And it really becomes obvious how man-made borders are, right? And there's always this talk, I think, of like, oh, we just want peace and we really just want people to come together. And there's this obvious space that's the border where we want people to come together, but not here. You know, this is where it stops. And that to me was always sort of really painful. And I think that I was always really struck by the fact that the flora and the fauna, you know, that it's the same really on both sides,
right.
And there really is no difference.
Right.
That there are differences from one side to another is just such a man-made thing. I mean, it's really this illusion that we create that causes so much pain.
And then having these sort of critters, you know, in your poem, you know, enhances that idea that, you know, that these boundaries are entirely man-made. Yeah. Mm.
You mentioned that you started writing a lot of these poems when you said it was a dissertation. Did you get a PhD in creative writing?
No, it was, well, we call it that at UNM.
Okay,
yeah.
So when you were writing your master's dissertation,
yeah.
Some of these poems, you know, started with that. And I'm wondering if any of the poems were written here in El Paso, specifically in my class that you can credit me for. And I could say I'm responsible for your genius. But seriously, joke.
No, you know, I wanted to write fiction when I started your class.
But I turned you off to it.
You turned her off of fiction.
I am responsible.
I'm a terrible fiction writer. I really am. Like, I mean, at least at this point, it doesn't come to me very well. Mm. I'm pretty sure I submitted a very early version of Angel and I as a flash fiction piece for your class. But it's changed a lot since then. And I think that might be it. I think.
Well, that's not the answer
I'm
I was hoping for. But,
I think
but
I
you got your animal
for
me.
Right.
I'm telling you, I was not writing very good stuff.
Well, you mentioned your husband, Angel, and I think one of the things that we haven't really discussed too much yet is that there's this real sort of almost surreal melding of, you know, border life with intimate sort of relationship scenarios in your poems. You know, there's this, I get this sort of inherent sense of love, deep, real love in your poems. And even when you use the second person, the you, I imagine throughout the collection that you're speaking to Angel, your husband. So my question is, would you consider these love poems?
Yes, I would. I think love poems have always been kind of an interest of mine. And it's definitely something that I like reading really good love poems, mainly because I think love poems are so difficult to write. The scary thing and the difficult thing about writing, I think, a really good love poem is that not only do you have to be really vulnerable in it, but you also have to show a lot of the really imperfect parts of that relationship.
Right.
Because that's what makes it beautiful.
Sure.
And so when I started writing this collection, I started, Angel used to joke, because I've always written letters to him, like by hand, and left them for him. And at some point when I was writing this, I was like, I wrote you another letter. And he was like, you mean another poem, don't lie. and so that's something that definitely interests me. And also, at some point, I just became really kind of obsessed with his name in the context of the collection. You know, because there's such a long tradition, right, in poetry of addressing kind of your poems to the angels, and that it would be sort of confused in this sphere, whether this is like the angels, the spiritual sphere, or very much of the love and physical sphere was kind of interest to me.
That's funny because Tim and I were talking before the show about how serendipitous it was that you married a man from Juarez named Angel.
Because yeah.
Otherwise it would have seemed a little forced. You know?
Yeah.
And then we were also saying how it evoked that Catholic image for us of those little kids crossing the bridge, and there's the angel right there leading them in, you know,
across the bridge,
directing
right.
their... That angel, you know, even as metaphor in this book, but
works.
On the literal level as well, and even on the thematic level, angel is in many ways access to that other side of, of the border.
Right, right.
What I really love about these poems is it's not only these cities that are verging and the relationships that are verging, but in the languages, like in that beautiful poem that you have, what's the name of that poem? Oh, yeah, Mouth in My Kitchen. You know, about having two languages, but also there seems to be two realities going on, verging as well. You have, you know, for lack of better words, the poetic logic, that reality, and then the narrative logic, that reality. The reader doesn't get lost in your poems, yet your poems are able to go into realities that the reader, you know, may not ordinarily have access to. And I'll give you an example. An Angel Reassures Me, I've Escaped the Virgin Cities. We know it's a story, a narrative about a woman watching a snuff film, recognizing her sister in the woman in the film, and then ultimately recognizing it as herself, which really is a beautiful way to end such a disturbing poem. So we know what's going on in the narrative level, yet at the same time we have lines like, I drank insecticide, but the ants poured out of my every orifice. Or the weeds in my closet prophesized before they died that I'd snap in half and be fed to monsters. Mm. These verging realities seem to make up part of the book. Is that the way you see, or is that what following language brings you into?
Both, in some ways. It's sort of when you grow up on the border, kind of living around people that are undocumented in different ways, you know, happens all the time, and they're people that you love and that you care about. You know, my husband was undocumented in the States for, you know, close to 15 years. I think that, you know, when you live in that space, you live with a lot of fear for those people around you. And sometimes I was really interested in kind of what is the line between the anxieties of my life and the anxieties in my dream, right? Like, how do they speak to each other? How are they different? And so in the poems, I really kind of tried to explore that space. So not only what are the actual anxieties of living in a border space, but also the way that those anxieties can then manifest themselves in your psyche and in your dreams. And so I was really interested in, because I think that by doing both, you're able to speak, you know, to a greater emotional landscape.
And it also might even verge the two traditions of poetry, perhaps the North American tradition and then the Latin American tradition.
That's true, yeah.
Probably, yeah, I would agree with that. Because it's interesting, right? Like Bolaño talks about that, how like the North is really interested, even in northern Mexico for that matter, like in realism, right? Like this is really what's happening. And then in the South, you're much more interested in magical realism and kind of what it means to bridge both.
We have been speaking with poet Natalie Center Sapico about her new collection of poetry, The Virgin Cities. Natalie, would you mind doing us the honor and reading us a poem from your collection?
Sure. Is there one in particular that you'd like me to read?
I really love Mouth in My Kitchen.
That's the one.
Sure.
All right, great.
Mouth in My Kitchen. Mouth was split roja, my wound que no curaba. Era mi boca, pero mi boca ya no hablaba. Acaricié sus labios. Esta boca opened itself. Two branches cut into a sky. Mouth, it's true. I speak another language. Lips, the bumps lodged along its tongue. I said, tell me I am lying. I stared at its cracked. It was silent. I asked, mouth, are you dying? I asked, mouth, why have you come? I asked to fetch a dish. I asked, mouth, are you alien? Every time I creaked through the kitchen, I told mouth it was stupid. Mouth, pages from books it couldn't read. I starved mouth, only to feed mouth paper towels and mop water over the sink. I told mouth, learn English. Mouth, like a child, pursed its lips and spat. I asked, mouth, where is your body? I asked, mouth, where could your delicate hands be? Mouth floated above me, an uneven hole. It would never leave me. This mouth, my id mouth, this mouth, my mother's.
That was Natalie Center Sapico reading Mouth in My Kitchen from her new book of poems, The Virgin City. That is a beautiful poem, Natalie, and it's a beautiful book.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on Words on a Wire.
Thank you, Natalie.
Thanks for having me.
We'd like to thank you for joining us for another edition of Words on a Wire.
We've been speaking with poet Natalie Center Sapico about her amazing debut collection of poetry, The Virgin Cities. So be sure to pick that up.
I think this one's going to be a prize winner.
I agree.
I'm Daniel Chacon.
And I'm Tim Hernandez.
And let us end with this quote by Roberto Bolaño, author of the incredible novel 2000-666, which takes place here on the border of El Paso and Ciudad Juarez. Nothing good ever comes of love. What comes of love is always something better.
I'm up on a tight wire. One side's ice and one is fire. It's a circus game with you and me. I'm up on a tight rope. One side's hate and one is hope. But the top hat on my head is all you see. Why?